Okay, good morning. We start lecture today. Today we have, please do remember, we have the app session. So that is the first practical session for you in A154 in the afternoon. Before we start the lecture two, today we will go through the second chapter in our textbook that is about the information security threats and attacks. Before doing that, I also want to remind you, already wrote a file with some comments, with some common comments on the homework I received. So by the noon Monday, I received in total 4 homeworks, and each of them I give some feedback already. But here I found common problem or challenges or some issues I want to address. You can check the details from this file. We don't have time to go through all these comments, but I just want to mention the two things. The first thing is it is about scientific method, or say how to reach a scientific conclusion. I saw, for example, in some of the homework, some people say there's no system existing, you know, current system or current healthcare sectors. It is good or it is bad. When you make such a judgment, you should be very careful, because if this is a homework is exercise is fine, but if this is your course paper or this is a answer for your long questions in your examination, you should have this mind sign how to make a scientific style answer. So do not jump to the conclusion too easily or quickly. And before you make a judgment, reach a conclusion or make a decision, you should think about the whole process. For example, if we talk about the scientific method, any people know this, how to make a scientific conclusion? You have some course in previous other lectures or in high school courses, or yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes, of course. So I believe most of you actually have this very basic knowledge. So the first step, of course, you need to establish a scientific model or theory. And by some observation, you form a hypothesis and make a prediction. Is this true or not? Then you make some experiment. Find experiments, I use experiment to prove it or disprove it. So this is a normal process. Yes, so if you think, for example, you think information security is good or bad, you should give some analysis result. The analysis can be, you establish a scientific model, you collect the data, you make analysis, and you see the analysis result support your conclusion or not. And another way could be, for example, if our limit is where time is very limited, I just give you a couple of days, you definitely do not have sufficient time to go through all the scientific methodology steps. Then, and the other way to reach a very quick conclusion, any idea? For example, through literature survey or interview, make a survey of state of art, look into the academic publication, because they are peer-reviewed publications. They send the state of art of one specific field, so you can get opinion from others. And this is not a rigid scientific proof or disprove, but at least you can get some trusted information sources, right? So today we actually talk about, I want to talk about these two facts. So if you want to reach a conclusion, of course you, we won. You use a scientific method. Hypothesis. Observation. Conclusion. Another more efficient way, but not that rigid it is. Literature's way, at least by this way you can get some opinion from other researchers. Actually another way to prove something is a mathematical proof. So actually speaking, it is not a scientific method. It is even better than scientific method. Why? Because it is a reasoning process and we produce a very rigid logic and result. So if you can make a scientific proof, you don't actually need if you can make a mathematical proof, basically you don't need a scientific method, because mathematical proofs, they are working in every situations. But this is very hard normally, and also for a practical applications, the situation will be quite complicated than just mathematicians. So basically you still need a scientific method to prove something. If this is still quite resource consuming for you, then you consider the third way, just do a literature survey, at least to get some opinion from others. We don't have a law to say aspects should include or how many samples should collect. Yeah, of course, if you collect more samples, you can consider more comprehensive aspects. It will make our research result more persuasive. It always depends on your business objective and also depends on your resource. It's hard to say. Yes, but this is a good question, actually. The question links to another question, whether we think the scientific method necessary to produce a trusted or for scientific results. Actually, not this case always. I still remember one paper I read from many years ago. It said more than 25% of the scientific work they fail, or they will be wrong conclusions, because scientific work, they establish mathematical models, which is a simplified model for the real case. The real case will be, in most of cases, much more complicated than scientific model. So inevitably, you will face a lot of errors or mistakes, or as you make different bias from different perspective. But so this is a established way for all of us to do a semantic work to reach a semantic result. By the way, personally, I don't like this scientific. A lot of people mention this word proof. To me, proof is it is a rigidly reasoning result. We can say mathematical proof, but I would not like this word scientific proof. You can say this word scientific evidence. So if you can collect more evidence, the evidence is more reasoning to support your result, that will be good. Okay. Today we continue with the lecture. And last lecture we talk about the definition of information security and the needs. So on top of the definition and the needs, we think about the concrete threats and attacks today. Just a short review of last lecture, and then give you the basic concepts, and then we talk about the concrete examples of threats and aspects. And the last thing I want to emphasize, the human factors, which is usually the weakest chain, but worth of us to pay attention. So I give you three examples to review the lectures last week we have given. Okay, the first example, a data breach accident happened early 2 years ago. So Anthem is a health insurance company in US, and their database was hacked and the data was breached. Customers' data were breached. Hacker broke into the medical insurance database. And a lot of records, actually they are stolen and they are stored in the database in plain text. Normally, if you want to protect your data, store it in database, first you have access control mechanism, right? You will not allow unauthorized users to access the database. Second, you should also consider some protection, data protection mechanism like encryption. But in this case, everything is in plain form. However, they were not to blame. Why? Because according to the regulation, insurance, health insurance companies, they were not defined in US as a healthcare organization. So they do not have this duty to protect this data as rigidly as required to healthcare organizations. And people think probably the attacking vector is administrator's credential were compromised. For example, by social engineering, phishing email, some tricks like this. Okay, this is the example of a data breach. Now I have these three questions for you to think. What are the vulnerabilities? Threats? Threat agent and the exploit used to launch such attack in this case. So first, what was the vulnerability in this case? So data stored in plain text. And threat? Threat means you have this vulnerability, and this threat can be exploited by attacker. And what way of this exploitation? For example, in this case, it's the credential theft or social engineering-based tricks. And the threat agent, that is the person to launch an attack, right? And the exploit could be, it was not reported in this case, but I guess it could be some social engineering tools, phishing email, as I mentioned, right? So the second question, is RCIA compromised in this case? So what are CIA? Confidentiality, integrity, availability. So which aspects was compromised in this case? Confidentiality. And any other aspects besides CIA? The identity theft that is relevant to authenticity, right? And next one, which of the following aspects of information security are involved in this case? So the four aspects also, I list these four as the four aspects from which you should write your papers. Yes. Yeah. That is basically a whole from the HIPAA, the regulation in US about the health security. Yeah, of course. You know, HIPAA in US, that is a law dedicated to protect the health data. So it is even higher requirement than the general protection regulations. So in this case, yes, the juristic aspects and also technical aspects, definitely. They need some technical tools. Organizational, probably we need to check whether there are management aspects of the credential or the staff, they were correctly or properly set up. Culture, maybe not pertaining in this aspect in this specific case. Okay, then another example that is ransomware. This happened actually early last year, before this year's WannaCry attack. And in this case, one hospital in Los Angeles, they paid this $17,000 in Bitcoin to get their data back from the attacker. And there is a survey after this case, say, ask the CIOs or CISOs from these health organizations, if hackers encrypt your hospital's patient data, would you pay the ransom to get it back? And half of them, they say no. And 44% of the answers, they say not sure. So basically, this is a diplomatic answers. Probably they will pay in this case if they say unsure. And a few of them, they say yes. And the one management official from this hospital, they say the quickest and the most efficient way to restore our system and the administrative functions was to pay the ransom. That seems very reasonable. And in the best interest of restoring normal operations, we did this. So the questions, two questions for you. If you were the person, the head of the hospital or the CIO or CISO, should you pay the ransom if your old data, your hospital's data were compromised, with or without being known to others? Any opinion on this? Maybe you can wait. Yes, you can ask for some technical support. Yeah. Yes, but in most of cases, hospitals, they didn't have any experience and they didn't make a well good preparation for this case. Agree. So this is always a balance you need to make between short-term targets or long-term targets. In long-term target, you should not pay, because this is a action to encourage the hackers to do similar things. But in short-term, in terms of short-term objectives, you should have this priority. Has the healthcare objectives has the priority. So most of them, they may choose to pay. Yes. Which factors, convenience, cost, or others, do you think you should consider during the decision? I think it is obviously the urgency to deal with the medical cases, the convenience. And also, if the ransom is not so high, in this case, it's just, if it's just a few thousand US dollars, most of the hospitals, they may want to pay. The third example also happened 2 years ago. It's also very famous since that time. Hillary Clinton email controversial. The case was she set up a private email server for official use. A lot of people criticized this. So the question is, of course, I think basically, we think this is a wrong action, so you should not do that. As a high rank official from government aspects, but which do you think are correct of the three sayings? The first one, CIO should not take the responsibility of information security breaches. We should blame the CISO, because CISO is exactly the person to take care of this information security management aspects. The second opinion is the security project team instead of CISO. CISO, it is still a, we say, the C-level official. They are, he or she might not get into the details of the information security management. So he should not take the responsibility. But the project team leaders in this case. And third opinion, senior management is the key to information security and should also share the liability. Yes. Yes. So correct answer is C. So do not keep this in mind. So our C-level management officials, they should also share the liability responsibility of information security management. Otherwise, if they would not do that, no people will really respect these information security policies, right? So through this all these three examples, we know that information security is a complicated concept. It is not limited to technology. It could be related to legal, it related to human factors. And also, for each information security cases, you should also pay attention to your major business objective. In the second case, we have the healthcare service. They have a priority in a short time. So most of them, they chosen to pay the ransom. And in this case, we should keep in mind that all the people in organizations, including the C-level people, management people, we should pay attention to information security and share the liability. Okay, we really start today's lecture. So today we talk about the threats and the attacks. So business first, we can see this from the second example, right? I just mentioned. So why we say business first? Because business objective is always the objective we want to achieve as a priority, because that is the objective of your organization. And information security, just a process or a means to achieve, to help to achieve this major business objective. And which aspects we need to pay attention? For example, the business we objective include, we should protect the ability to function, for organization to smoothly function. And in the best cases, information security should be transparent. The customers, the staffs, they should not notice that any information security mechanism they are actually working. Otherwise, it will be very disturbing. And they should also enable the safe operation of IT systems. For example, emails, phone, computers, software applications. And the third aspect is the data, protect the data. Data could be your business data, customer data, any project report, for example. If we look at the data to be protected, we say in which two modes data exist. First is, we say data in motion or data in transit. For example, if you send some information from one place to another place, the channel, the communication channel should be protected in this case. And another mode, we call it data at rest. That is data stored in database or hard disk, for example. And another aspect, that is the technology assets, including the IPR, the equipment, experimental tools, infrastructure, for example. Besides, we should take business object as the priority. We should also think, keep this in mind, information security also a management issue. It is not limited to technical aspects. And organizations, they should address the information security in terms of business impact and the cost. For example, if your budget is very limited, you should really need to consider whether you use this budget to improve the, for example, the user experience of your product or the security aspects. Your short-term profits, if you take a short-term profit as objectives, you may want to use this money for increasing the, for example, the user experience or the performance of product. But from a long-term profit perspective, for example, your organization's reputation, you may want to invest some part of the money to information security. But there's no standard answer to this. It really depends on the concrete or specific situation. You have to make the decision. And talk about threats and attacks. What are threats? Threats are object, person, or organization that can represent a constant danger to an asset. And they are latent dangers. So the difference between threats and attacks is a concrete process, actions towards the digital assets you are going to protect. But the threats is just a type of vulnerabilities or tools the attacker can use, can exploit to address your weakness. And our textbook have a list of, for example, examples of typical threats, like the compromises to the IP, software attacks, deviation in quality of services like a DDoS attack, espionage, force of nature, like the natural disasters, and so on. And we extracted some aspects in this lecture. For example, one aspect is very technical aspects. I think most of you there, you might have interest in, that is deliberate software attacks. For example, the malicious softwares, we call it malware, designed to damage, destroy, or deny the services to the targeted system. This includes virus, worms, Trojan horses, backdoor or trapdoor, polymorphic threats, and some hoax. some 0 days or 0 hours. We will talk about the virus and the worms and what are the differences between the two, and also the polymorphic threats, why attackers think this is a better strategy. And all these threats actually, some people, they are really exploit this, they invent this and want to sell it by some, for example, the computer hack context. Some people know this, right? PO2O. They're a hacking test. So if you can invent new tricks or method to hack a system, you may be rewarded by some incentive given by some big companies like Microsoft. In this case, hacker, for example, they sell unpatched Microsoft Windows 0 days for some small money. And pay attention to that. From year 2013, the Wassenaar arrangement. Any people know this? So originally, that is a arm control treaty established by many countries on this planet. So if you, they have agreement, we should not export such very inhuman or dangerous weapons to disseminate it to different countries. We should have some control on these dangerous weapons. And from the year 2013, people think we should also add this cyber weapon, like software weapon, to this agreement. And besides the software, another type of threat, it is the quality of service. If you cause some trouble to a normal operation of a business, that is also another type of threats. For example, such of services include internet of services, communications, or even power supply. Espionage and trespass. Some simple means, for example, just look over the shoulder at other people's password when he or she is typing. And where typing, listening to the communication channels. Espionage camera, security surveillance camera, internet hacking, or some skilled hackers, they can develop some script, use some hacking tools to get the information they want. Basically, there were two types of hackers. We say the many ones, they are skilled ones, the professional ones, and another type we call the script kiddies, which is normal people, just use the exploit given by the professionals. And even this is a even increasing threat today because of the future trend of Internet of Things, smartphones, devices. Every people today carry a smartphone or devices with you in anytime, anywhere, right? So all these smart devices and the infrastructures and also the future Internet of Things, we have sensors embedded at every corner of this world, will increase the we call the attacking surface for attacker. Others threats include, for example, the force of nature, fire, floods, earthquake, human errors. A lot of information security incidents, they were actually caused by human errors or mistakes, accidents, or employee mistake, for example, in this case. Sabotage, vandalism, theft of the equipment, or credential, technical hardware or software failure or errors. And the least but not the last but not the least is technological obsolescence. This is especially the typical threat to, for example, healthcare domain, because you know the healthcare services equipment, normally they are very high in cost. They paid a lot of money to get the equipment, the system. They expect the whole system to running for 10 years, 20 years. So in this case, the system might be quickly get outdated and leave a lot of security holes for attacker. And we want to also talk about attacks. So as I mentioned, the difference between threats and attacks. Threats is the possibility for attackers to launch attack. Attacks, they are really actions, different types of actions they can use to achieve the hacker's purpose. They exploit the vulnerability. Vulnerability is a perspective from the organization's perspective, right? And they use some exploit. Exploit is, in this case, we call the tools they use to launch an attack. And for example, the IP scanning, web browsing, virus, insecure fair share or resource share, a mass mail. You can get some more information from our textbook about the concrete implementation. And I just want to focus on several aspects. For example, the software, the malicious software or malware. We have different types of this malicious code. For example, the first example here I use is the hoaxes. So basically, it is this is a good example here. This fire actually was a Microsoft system fire. And in year 2001, some people received an email or message saying, sending by some unknown sources or person. They say, a virus could be in your computer file now, dormant, but will become active from June the 1st. Try not to use your computer on that day and follow the directions below. And they ask the recipient of the email to click the one link or do the following operations, for example, just to delete this file from the operating system. And this is this was proved to be a hoax. Actually, the fire was a normal fire, and it was not a virus. But the action like this, we call it a hoax. So some attacker pretend they are customer services, and they make you believe some virus happened, or they are functioning in your systems, and cheat you to delete the normal file. And after this, they can say, also, we have some solutions. If you want to get a solution, you can pay some money for us. So this is a simple case. It didn't involve any technical details or advanced technical tools because it was a hoax. And now we talk about the really technical tools of a malicious software, for example, the virus. So virus is a malicious code appended to an executable program. So if we say executable program, basically we can find, for example, these different places we can append this malicious code to. The first aspect is the boot record. So the place the whole operating system want to boot, want to start from this code. And they have to read this code to start the whole system. So this is a place the attacker, they may want to find to insert the virus there. Another aspect is the executables. For example, under the Windows systems, it is the .exe file. Or micro or scripting virus. It can be embedded to, for example, the Microsoft Word or PDF. When you open such file, then it will be automatically activated. So what is the process of a virus So the first step, the variables insert itself into a normal file, and then if you invoke, execute the file, then actually the variables was the first place to be executed. And then after execution of the malicious codes, the variables give the handles the write to the normal part. So in this case, the normal part of the code still they will be still executed. So we'll see you will see what we expected. So the program was invoked and the program was running. But however, before the normal running, the variables worked in the before that. And another task of variables is they want to spread itself to different places, want to contaminate other files as well. If you look at the mechanism of variables is a mechanism the attacker add malicious codes to the normal codes. Normally before in the first part or the latter part, make this appending of these codes. So you can reasonably think this data appending may make the file length changed. Normally make it larger, right? So this is a very easy feature that we can use to detect a virus from a file. And if you're an attacker, you may think about other tricks to conceal this change. For example, the easy trick is if you want to append a virus to original file, you may want to compress the original file first and do this data appending. And in this case, the file size will largely be kept. And if you are a information security or officer, or you are a antivirus company, technology designer, what could be your countermeasure in this case? Or we say signature, because in this case, also the file size is fixed. They did not change. We can see the variables. We can detect the bit patterns of the variables that we call the signature. We can detect the signature if it exists in the existing file. If it exists, we say, okay, the file has been infected with a virus. But a more advanced method can be used by attacker, by virus makers to conceal this. For example, they can encrypt their variables. And every time they use different keys, secret keys, then make the encryption results of the virus, they are different. So there's no constant signature for you to detect in this case, right? And even worse is some people, they can make the virus codes. They can mutate the code a little bit and also make the mutation plus encryption or even create a new, completely new script with the same output. For example, you can using different coding style, use different script, and as long as the output is the same, the effect is the same, it is okay. So in this case, it's very hard to detect the virus. And in this case, we have to observe the behavior. Then it looks like an intrusion detection system. You have to monitor the program's behavior and generate some alert if the risk you see it is higher than the threshold. Or a simple way is the key tricks of viruses. The virus always need the rights to modify the program and access the memory. So if you can put some access control mechanism, that could be also another way. And talk about the worm. So the difference between worm and a virus is, by virus, attacker need to embed a malicious code to the existing file or program, for example, in the boot record. But by worms, they don't have this need. Why? Because worm is usually propagated while network, and exploiting some vulnerabilities from the operating system, for example, in this case. And if the vulnerabilities can be identified, the worms can be invoked or can be executed without any consent or even notice of the normal user. So they do not rely on a user to activate the file or execute the file. And this could be the system vulnerability. This could be, for example, some malicious code can be embedded on a normal website, and if the user to use a browser to browse the website, the browser's vulnerability can be used, and the malicious can be codes can be downloaded to your local drive and activated later. Or some autorun mechanism, like if you insert a USB or CD to your laptop, the autorun mechanism will execute the worms. Or email attachment, if you open an email attachment from unknown sources. And a famous example of worms attack is Stuxnet. I believe some of you know this case. And the worm was identified in year 2010. And it was really complicated device. And it concludes and contains even 4 zero-days. And the target is very specific. It was targeting at the mechanism to make uranium enrichment. So it can change the speed, the spinning speed of the centrifuge of the to make the uranium enrichment. So if you can change the speed of the spinning, for example, to a much higher speed, then a lot of heat can be generated, and then the whole system can be broken down. And the rumor said this is a web weapon made by Israel or US addressing the Iran infrastructure for this uranium enrichment purpose. And the worms targeting at the logical controllers. Basically, it is an industry network, and the attacking surface. So the vector is a normal Microsoft Windows system where a USB stick. And you can check some details here. I will not go to the details how this attack was launched, the whole process. And besides virus and worms, we also found such terms like a backdoor. Some people call it a trapdoor. But I would not recommend to use this anymore, because this term was normally used in cryptography. And I recommend we always say backdoor. What is that? That is a malware that possesses a access to a system by bypassing normal access control. So in this case, for example, if you have a password or account name and password access control mechanism, a backdoor insert in your system might allow a third party to access your system without any password control. Of course, it can be used for normal or purpose, like if you are developing a system, you always find this easy to access your project without any access control. This is easier for you to do maintenance or during software development, but it can also be used by hackers. Password cracking, I think I will stop here. And after a short break, we'll come back and we'll try some online tools we will talk about how to cracking simple password in this case. Okay. Okay, we continue the lecture. Yes. Another types of attack we encounter frequently in real life, it is the password cracking. And definitely we can find a lot of approaches to crack a password. And this is also linked to another question: where and how we should store the password for comparison. So basically the mechanism for password control is you have password. You say password 0, that is enrolled in a system. So you might have a database containing this password. So next time you want to access to the system, we call it, you have a probe password, right? So this is a very naive way we can implement this password-based access control. You just compare the probe and the reference. Call it reference. If the two passwords match, okay, the system can grant you a access. But this is definitely not secure. Why? Yes. Yeah. So first, the communication channel. They can be intercepted, and yes. So this is a plain format, right? So if the so we have two aspects for attacker to attack: communication channel you can intercept, database you can, if you can compromise the database, you get all these passwords, right? And people know this is not secure, but not every people, not every organization, they really think this is a bigger threat. So still a lot of servers so far in real life, they use this mode. So a better way could be we store a hash of the password, right? And any people know hash? Or if you do not know hash, you raise your hand. Okay, some of you. So hash, basically, they are a transformation. If you have a password, you put it as an input of a hash function, you get a hash value, h, as output. So what is the functionality of this hash function? So basically, yes, jumps to here. You should have three requirements. The first requirement, we say one way. The second one, we call the compact. And probably fixed in size. The third requirement of a hash function is the, we call it, collision free. So by a hash function, from the output, you will be very hard to get the input. So if you know the output, it will be very, very hard for you to get input. That is what we call the one way, just one way. And second aspect is this output is fixed in size. For example, if the output is fixed in size, you can have an easy method to compare, right? And also it should be compact. Suppose the password is very, very long. We say have 1K bytes. This is not normal. However, this is a possibility, right? And it can map by the hash function to a fixed size, for example, 128 bits. And if it is a very short password, like just, let's say, 2 bytes, say 2 bits, too short for a password, 2 bits, or maybe 1 byte, let's say 8 bits. It can also map it to 128 bits. So this is very good. If you have always the fixed size output, then you can compare. And third requirement is collision free. That means it will be very hard to find 2 passwords. Not password in this case. For example, just general input. We say x1, x2. If you can find 2 of this input, they are mapped into the same hash. Then actually you correct this hash function. So the design of this hash function will make this process very, very hard. And also another variant of this requirement is if you found a 1x, then you calculate the hash to h, and it will be very hard for you to find another x2 to get the same result. So slightly different here. The assumption is you in the same time you found 2. Here you first you have 1 and you try to find another 2. And if both of these processes are very hard, we say the hash function, they have this property, collision free. And back to the topic. We can store a hash function here of the password. And how to solve the problem, the challenge of the communication channel. So we have encryption. We call it a secure communication protocol. For example, we say password authentication protocol like PACA, like SRP, Secure Remote Password Authentication Protocol. You can find a lot of protocols to help you to do this. Or we can just use TLOS before it called SSL to establish this communication channel. Then in this case, you have a probe. And the protocol will be here. The server will send you a challenge. S. And you calculate. Okay, this is implied in the cryptocurrency. We have a protocol called challenge response. but this was implied in the secure protocols. So the basic idea is you, through these protocols, you can generate a hash of the probe, and you compare these two. If they are the same or not. But still, there could be some vulnerability of this scheme. Yes, this is one thing. So you have to be careful with the password here. It should be very secure. But of course, on the other hand, it should be useful. If it is too complicated, no people can memorize it. But another aspect is, this is a more advanced topic. If you have this database leaked, so that means the attacker, this time, he or she cannot get the original password. However, he can get this list of hash, right? Hash 1, hash 2. Each hash is corresponding to a user identity. And the normal attacker attacking method is, if you have this list of hash, if the server asks, send me your password hashes, then you don't need to actually know the password. You can just have this compromise the hash as the input to send to the server. If the server just compares the two hashes, if they match, the attacker can be guaranteed with access, right? That is also the reason we need this, the challenge response protocol, or this SSLO, TSLO. The purpose is, if, for example, here, you send a challenge S, you can calculate a hash like this. So this hash is the hash result from your password. And S is a challenge. It's a random number generated and sent from the server. Every time for each transaction, they could be different. And in this case, the communication channel can be secured, because every time if you intercept the communication channel, you'll get a different results. However, it is still not enough, sufficient to cope with the problem we mentioned. If the whole database of the hashes are leaked, attacker can still know the hashes. And I will not go to details. The PARC, as I mentioned, or SRP. SRP is a type of a PARC protocol. They can be used to address this attack. So the final result will be, effect will be, even all the information from the server are leaked, attacker cannot get any chance to successfully to use this information from leaked from the server to launch a successful attack. And here we have two links we can try together. Cracks a simple password. This is just a symbol I found from a website to generate a hash, MD5 hash. The MD5 hash has been broke since more than 10 years ago, so normally no people are using it seriously. But this is a good example for you to understand the hash, the concept of hash. And here, for example, we can type in some password, like a simple password, like 123QWE, right? So a lot of people use this. And we can see this hash function, hash string has been computed. And here, from another website, they try to crack a hash. So if we put a hash value here, to see if the attack can be successful. Yes, right? 123QWE, and we can try another simple one. Any suggestion here? Password? Okay. I copy the hash here, then we calculate the input. Password. A little bit more difficult. Any suggestion? Wow, that will be pretty difficult. I can assure you that will not work. for example, a little bit more difficult, let's say. Continue. Or maybe this one. This is difficult enough for this website. Of course, you can come towards more powerful machines to do the hacking. Just example to show the hash-based password can be hacked. So the principle, the mechanism actually you can use brute force, combinations of letters and zeros and different special characters, and try by brute force searching. Or dictionary, as you mentioned, we might have some simple words like for password, and you form a dictionary containing such frequently used words, and you try them first. Or rainbow table, you generate a lot of hashes from the not frequently used password and try to find this collision or find this matches. Yes, besides password attacking as a password hacking as attack method, in real life, we also encounter a lot for this type of attacks. We call the denial of services, DOS, or distributed version, or DDoS. So the symbol here, I give you a simple example. Attacker can exploit a vulnerability of existing TCP protocols to launch a successful attack of DDoS. Suppose there were two parties during the TCP communication, one transaction protocol. So a user sent a first, according to a protocol, to send a SYN message to the server, and server give a acknowledge back. And then the server will wait for another acknowledge from the user. So the vulnerability is this step. If a hacker sends a lot of such requests, and the server will be full loaded by cope with sending the SYN attack, SYN acknowledge signals, and if attacker will not send back this acknowledge as the third step, the server will wait. They will always wait. So they will not give a chance to normal users to establish a new connection. So this is an easy way to launch a DDoS attack. Of course, there were more complicated mechanisms. Another types of attack, we call IP spoofing. The idea is also very simple. The attacker want to pretend he or she is the normal user, authorized user from the same local network, so he can modify his real IP to a faked IP, which looks like from the trusted domain, to trick the firewall to let the packet in to pass by. So of course there were more advanced mechanisms to detect such attack and prevent it on the firewall side. And man in the middle, in this case, attacker can not only intercept the information between in the communication channel, which links between the party A and the party B, and he can also use a computing resources to play as B when communicate with A, so make A believe he is B. And also he can play as A to communicate with B to convince B that he's A. So in, we have some cryptography protocols like Diffie-Hellman, which is very useful protocols to establish a trust between two parties and share a secret. So that is a type of public cryptography tools. But however, it is easy to be attacked by this man in the middle attack. So normally, if you want to use this, you need also use authentication schemes to make sure the two parties, they are real versions, to make the proof the authenticity of the two parties. And other attacks like spam, like mail bombing, sniffer, which is can be used to monitor the data dissemination over a wireless network, phishing, using social engineering tricks to make you believe you are talking to a some trusted party, but actually not. Yes, I give you some real examples of phishing. I believe a lot of you already received such emails, phishing emails in daily life. Like in this case, I received SIMs from Apple. And this one, I received a phishing email from Danske Bank. And the email address is very suspicious. Of course, you can attacker can always modify the address, the name here. And this one from PayPal, email address security-PayPal. But if you hover your mouse cursor here, and that time I did so, you found a very suspicious link here from Denmark. And here in this case, it's a fake website, also a phishing scheme to make you believe this is official Facebook website, but if you look at the web address. And we have other attacks like farming, like you can set up a fake website, or you are in fact a legitimate website with a malicious code and attract the different users to visit this website and get infected. and then you can collect all the information from the visitors. Or social engineering, we can use social skills to convince people to reveal access or to make them believe you are the trusted party. And here is a very good saying from the famous hacker Kevin Mitnick. He said, people are the weakest link. You can have the best technology. You can have the best firewalls. You can have intrusion detection systems. You can have equipment like biometric devices to identify your identity. However, if some people call you and you believe that person is a trusted person you are talking to, and you can release your reveal information to him or some secret, and they can get everything. Ransomware is an information type of information extortion. So normally attacker can steal or copy or encrypt the information from your information systems, and then demands and the compensation for its return or non-disclosure. For example, non-disclosure, if you do not want this information to be leaked to others, then you should pay me the money. And these tricks had been used a lot for get, for example, medical records, credit card, or other information, sensitive informations. And the WannaCry attack, as we know from three months ago, the attack was a very typical one for ransomware. It was started from May 12th, and the attacker demanded the payment through a Bitcoin. Why? Yes, it is basically harder to trace the genuine identity. And if you use normal bank transactions, you know a lot of countries, they have a mechanism or agreement on KYC. What is that? Know your customer. So it is agreement or mechanism established among the banks. If you make transactions, they should know who you are, right? So for the auditing purpose. So this is for auditing. Auditing is obviously one objective in this case. We should also consider this as a information security objective. But by Bitcoin, no people knows your genuine identity associated with a Bitcoin address. I think the intention is to get rid of government control, right? So the idea is very, the free market, free trade, everything should be privacy enhanced in this case. So no people can control you. There's no central bank in the cryptocurrency world. However, of course, in practical scenarios, you can still have some control or influence, like you can establish a farming for mining the bitcoins. Yes, a lot of debates. I think still very few countries they accept bitcoin in official transactions, but you know, the government cannot control everything. Yes. Yeah. I understand your point. And to implement a efficient mechanism for know your customer, this is actually one of the very challenging tasks, research task or development task for Bitcoin or blockchain nowadays. That means we should strike a balance between government auditing purpose and also the privacy of the users of Bitcoin. Very hard. And back to this WannaCry case, the attacker used actually they are not zero days, so they are not really novel tools. And if you have a good patch up of your Windows systems, you will be immune to such attack. And the basic protocol is, if your system was infected by this tool, then so the first step will be there will be some random AES key. AES is symmetric encryption standard. Nowadays a lot of people are using it, so it is very hard to break. So the malicious code will establish randomly generate a key and use this key to encrypt your file by AES. And because the key is randomly generated, and how to save this key? You have to save this key on the victim's local drive or system, right? And you cannot get this key and store it in your system. There will be a lot of such keys. It will not be convenient for a hacker. So a hacker then use his public key to encrypt this AES key and store this encrypted version in the same in the victim's system. So next time, if the victim are willing to pay the Bitcoin, and if the payment is successful, and he can use his private key to decrypt the AES key and use the decrypted AES key to decrypt your file. So this is the whole process. So lessons learned. We should always patch up our systems to keep it upgrade to the status. And also we think a lot of exploit, they are not zero days nowadays. Even old tricks, they can work, because there were so many systems and computers, they are not patched up. And human factors. The last piece I want to talk is the human factors, which was considered by many people as the weakest chain. And for example, the social engineering attacks like phishing emails, phishing call. There's some statistics saying social engineering attacks cost 25,000 to 100,000 per incident, and 32% of the companies of all sizes, they have experienced at least 25 such social engineering attacks in the past 2 years. So it is really a threat in real life. Every organization, you believe, they will face such a type of threats in daily operation. And the study even conducted in year 2013 by actually a student, master student working here, they show that in Norway, the most frequently exploited phishing media are email, internet surfing, social network and the phone call, even by phone call, like in the first lecture we talk about this Microsoft customer support. And this is a very good case to convince you that every people are not easy to get immune to such a social engineering attack. Julie Brill, she is a regulator on the information security aspects from US. He's a high rank official and he's expert in information security. And in this case, it's very easy for such people to fail for phishing tricks like this case. The story starts with some morning she received one email from one of the trusted connection, actually her friends, and without any thinking, she downloaded the attachment and executed the program, which actually was proved to be a phishing email and attachment. Another case, Target data breach. Any people know this case? Okay, Target was a supermarket chain in US. And they outsourced their technology, or ICT part, the IT part, to another IT provider, technology provider. And because of the phishing email was received by the technology vendors, and the whole system of the target customer data was leaked. And even worse is, this is not the end of the story. Within the 24 hours following the accident, because this is a big accident, Target has a lot of customers in US, and a lot of customers, they received an email, a message, similarly sent from Target, saying, you may notice that we have a serious accident, hacking accident in the past 24 hours, and we reasonably believe that your account might be hacked or affected by this accident. So please do so, or click the link, do the following procedures to make sure that you are okay, you are not affected or not. So by following the guidance of the phishing email, a lot of customers, they are really tricked by this case, and shared their personal information with the hacker. And another one is the RSA case. RSA is a company founded by the famous authors of the RSA, public cryptography scheme. And they are a company dedicated to information security and cryptography applications. And even they, some staff working there, they, in this case, easily click the email attachment, running the program, and get the whole system infected by the malicious code. So you see, even a information security company or technology provider, they are not immune to such social engineering attack. So what could be the trick? Why all of the people, either it is layman or it is expert in information security, they can be easily cheated or tricked and for such information as for such phishing emails or other types of social engineering attacks, because attacker need to exploit a lot of weakness from the human aspects, like human have a lot of fears of security as incidents. And if you are encountered, you are faced with a information security incidents, and which demands you to make a quick decision with a very limited time, then you have a very high level of stress. With a high level of stress, you might make a very unwise decision in this case. So also, if you are overloaded by parallel work, you are very busy, overloaded by a lot of work, in this case, you may be easy to get tricked by such phishing messages to make a very hurried decision. Other psychological aspects from human aspects, like a greed, if you, for example, to get some incentive from the attackers from phishing email, you might click the link. And the conclusion is, people's self-assessment in vulnerability to phishing attacks does not correlate with the actual record of actually being phished. So what does this mean? That means some research revealed that even you are well educated, you are well trained, sometimes you may still fall for such social engineering tricks. And even well-trained and confident, it's not sufficient to make you immune to such phishing attacks as well. So that is the last slide of this lecture. The human factors, we see the weakest chain because the humans, they are very easy to be tricked by social engineering and by other information security tricks. And we don't see any master solutions in this aspect. A good practice is we have to keep our employees in organizations trained from time to time. So we should keep the frequency of the training. In law, we call it due diligence. If the social engineering, if the security training for the staffs just once per year, I think that is probably not sufficient. And in that case, you might increase the frequency. Of course, not too frequent, not every week, but you should keep the balance between the convenience, the cost, and also the security requirements. And in this case, the staffs might have higher chance to detect such social engineering tricks in early phase and to minimize the chance the staffs can be tricked. Okay, this afternoon we will have the first practical. In A154, and from 2:15 to the 4:00. By the way, I also received some message from our administration that after the week, after the week 41, that is start from week 42, we might have some change on the locations of lecture room. It has not been confirmed yet. I will get this confirmed as soon as possible and notify you. Okay, thank you.